Welcome to another episode of the Growth Focus Podcast, where we bring together tech leaders and founders from all across the globe to share their insights, expertise on how we can grow our businesses. My name is Gary Lafferty, your host, CEO and creator of the Authority Accelerator, where we turn founders and leaders in the tech industry into the authorities rather than just another expert, so that they can be chosen by their ideal client as opposed to the one doing all the chasing. Now, without further ado, I have got the absolute pleasure this episode to welcome my guest, Mike, where we'll be talking about the ups and downs and ups again of entrepreneurship within the tech industry. We're going to be talking about how, by not following the crowd, one can actually progress far quicker. We're going to be talking about things like dirty projects. It's not what you think, so make sure you stick around. So we've got a whole host of insights that he's going to be sharing with us today. So without further ado, Mike, it's an absolute pleasure having you here today. Why don't we start off with you giving us a little brief outline of how you got started, who you are, what is it you do, how you got started in the tech world?
Sure. I'm Mike Rispoli, CTO of Cause of a Kind. I am a founder of a digital agency. We build software for everybody else. That's kind of the quick pitch for the whole thing. I'm a career software engineer, self-taught. I started this career quite by accident, really. I had a friend who said, "Do you want to build some websites for my company?" And the rest is history.
Yeah. It's always that way, isn't it? Sometimes the majority of leaders I speak to, especially within the tech world, I would say it's probably 60 to 70% started by accident. They didn't really start off thinking they're going to come into the tech industry. It was just pure by accident that while I was doing something and then something happened. And now I'm here where I am.
Exactly right. I think, you know, when I went to college or first graduated, I wanted to be like a forest ranger. I wanted to work outside. I would never have imagined this for myself, truly. So I always say, if I talk to my younger self, they'd be like, "Wait, what happened? You're going to have to explain that to me."
Yeah. Well, listen, let's get dive straight into it, because you've got a fascinating story. You know, when we've spoken before, you know, every time I speak to you, Mike, I get a little bit more fascinated about your story and the past. And I think people here, you know, are going to get very inspired about where you came from, the challenge you've had, and where you are today. So let's talk about this. Let's start. You're very close to my heart. We're both bootstrap entrepreneurs. You know, I started off my bootstrap, and then I end up selling it and moving on as an exit founder. You're a bootstrap one. Let's start about the challenges of bootstrapping. You know, when we're first starting, everyone seems to see tech as this big multi-million dollar, you know, everyone's trying to be that unicorn. But there's quite a number of us who are actually bootstrap guys, you know, bootstrap yeah. guys and girls out there. Let's talk a little bit about the challenges that come with bootstrapping.
Yeah. I think your biggest challenge with bootstrapping is that we ran into as well is probably the managing of cash flow, is dealing with this idea that you need to run projects or whatever service you offer has to accumulate enough profit to kind of fuel this funnel. It's very slow going in the beginning, and you make mistakes and you potentially take loans and do all sorts of things. The challenge there is it's all on you. It's your own money. So, you know, you take loans and things, you have to put up your home and collateral and all that. It's very different than taking someone else's money on some like hope and a prayer that may or may not work out, and paying yourself the same salary you're used to and all that stuff. So bootstrapping presents all these challenges of having to create a sustainable profit model, having to pay yourself out of those profits, having to pay and grow a staff out of those profits, all the while you take all of the risk that an investor would take in you.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think those who can get past, so it might be a bit of a slower growth, but, you know, it's a lot more fulfilling, I would say, to some people. Some people would say it's much more fulfilling because you literally have grown the baby from its ground, you know, and put everything in and taken the challenges with it. Now, I know you shared with me, you know, you had a really hit low point in 2022, you know, and so but before we get to that low point, why don't you back up a little bit and give us a little bit about your story of how you got started, where did you get to, and then how did you hit this low point in 2022?
Yeah. So we started off, originally my co-founder and I, we were out surfing together. We grew up rock climbing together, surfing. We're out surfing, and we decided that we had this idea that we were going to build some SaaS product and we were going to sell it. And we had basically taken a few stabs at different things. None of them really validated. And then one day we were like, you know, we have this digital, you know, we have this digital background. He was a marketer doing SEO. I was an engineer. Let's build an agency. And I had liked agency work. And so we had said, okay, let's pivot Cause of a Kind, which was supposed to be like an auction type platform, into an agency. And we were growing it while we worked our regular jobs. So we would kind of moonlight, we would sign a project, we would do it. At some point in during COVID, I want to say in 2021, we were working remotely and we were getting so much work that we had to start hiring and we couldn't handle it. And that was when we hit this point in 2022 where we said we signed our biggest project. It was a large medical contract with the hospital for special surgery. It was like one of these big six-figure deals. And we were like, okay, we have to make a choice here. Either we're in or we're out. We quit our jobs. And our first day full-time, January 1, 2022, we were in business for ourselves. And we took a small business loan to just in case. It was really supposed to be a just-in-case kind of scenario. Something went wrong and we were like, we have plenty of revenue. We were signing projects. As you know, we did effectively rose up to just below $1 million in our first year. We thought we were really awesome. And then at the end of 2022, it was like the bottom dropped out on everything. A lot of our biggest customers all canceled projects, not through any fault of our own. It was just this economic shift seemed to have happened overnight in tech, and it would last through all of 2023. And it, effectively, we were fighting for our lives, and we had to we had 22 employees, had to lay off the whole staff. And it basically went back to Mike and Justin and one other person again. And we were like, oh my God, what just happened? And we were basically fighting for our lives and 2023 happened, but we survived. We're here. 2024 was an amazing year. So it was that down, up, down, like up, down, and up again.
Yeah. And yeah.
I have to say that was probably our most formative year, though, was really battling through 2023 here.
Well, let's talk about that. So before we talk about 2024 and, you know, and how you got there, because that's a whole nother story, which, you know, I'm dying to get into for you to share your insights on that. But yeah, you know, as you say, you gave up your jobs. Yeah, although you've been in business before, it was officially 2022. Really business owners now. Well, we don't really have another job. We're really business owners. You literally put your nose to the grindstone. You got up to almost $1 million within the first year. There'll be people listening thinking, holy moly, how the hell did they get to $1 million in their first year? So regardless of that, you did, right? You got to where you got to. And then boom, like you say, the bottom just fell out of it and you all came tumbling down. Now, despite what you did, and went back to three people, talk us through the mindset and the emotions that you had to go through to keep going rather than go, do you know what? This is all, I'm done. I'm out. I'm going back to get it in a job.
Yeah. Well, I have to say, when we first took the leap, that was our thought, is if this doesn't work, we can always go back to getting another job. The problem that started happening was it wasn't like the bottom fell out and one day. It's sort of like a client cancels, a month goes by, a client cancels, and you still had leads in the pipeline. So you sort of are dying this slow death, and like leads are not really closing, but they're keeping you on the hook, and we're dipping into that small business loan. And so we sort of hit this point where you hit this realization, and people say, was it scary taking the leap? And I'm always like, no, the leap wasn't scary. What was scary was when you had all these employees that depended on you and you had dipped into a business loan such that now you have to start paying this thing back. You're like, our homes were put up as collateral and everything. So the option to go back to work really wasn't there. Even though we kept thinking maybe we would do that, we were like, no, you got to swim or drown now. There's no looking back. Like the bridge is burnt. I was like, we have to pay this back no matter what. And because we were so afraid to make layoffs when we needed to, I think part of it was optimism. Like one of these leads is bound to close. And the other part of it is you sort of feel like the team is almost like family. And we had not really, I've never had to lay anyone off, even as a lead engineer before, under those circumstances where it was like, oh my God, we truly have to make some pivots here. And we were kind of dreading that moment and putting it off too long. And I've talked to a bunch of agency owners, and that seems to be a common thread. Like, yeah, it took way too long to lay off the staff. I went into debt, and then I had to pay my way back out of it. So we basically had to fight. And I had always had this idea. I bring up this book, The Hard Thing About Hard Things, where he says every business has to fight for its life at some point. I had always thought that we just wouldn't have to do that. Like, oh, we just cruised out of jobs. We had plenty of revenue. And then suddenly we had to. And then there wasn't really a way to turn back. So we were like, hey, the moment was, you know, it's very much when you go rock climbing and you're kind of, there's a point when you're up on a climb and you're kind of placing your gear and moving your way up the wall. Sometimes you get into a tough spot and you start getting into what's called the crux. You've climbed higher than you're able to down climb. Like, I cannot reverse the moves I just did. It's easier to climb up than climb down. So the only way out is up. And that's really what we hit. I was said the only way out of this is to climb up and not fall. And that was really how we looked at it. And that attitude kind of helped us persevere through it.
That is a great analogy. I love that about rock climbing, you know, but it is because you just look at it's going to be easier to climb up no matter how hard it is than it is to climb back down again, you know, because so I might as well keep going. And I love that drivenness that you had in there because, you know, one would say you had no choice, but we always have choices in life, always have choices as entrepreneurs. It's which path we take. That's the important part that sees us through to where we go to. So let's move on now from, you know, and, you know, congratulations for you doing that. What lessons did you learn? So again, before we move forward into, again, the growth of where you are today, what lessons did you learn from those 18 months of growth and then literally things just dropping off little by little?
Yeah. I think that the first thing that we learned is that we needed to know our numbers better. So we had an accountant that always kind of kept our books up to date, and he had kind of been issuing the warnings to us. Hey, you guys are, you know, you're down this much, but it's not that bad. Again, not that bad. Not so great, but we weren't understanding the numbers ourselves. We had no MBAs. We didn't have it. You know, you think it's just so easy, like just make sure that your profits are higher than you're charging the customers. There were some tactical things in how we were handling software projects that had to change, which one was we had to get away from fixed scopes because those fixed scopes lead to creep and your own customers will actually put you out of business if you run into that. And believe it or not, they don't even realize they're doing it. But you're actually not doing them any favors by not being profitable. So that's the first thing you have to realize is you have to move away. We had to move away from those fixed scopes. We had to understand our numbers looking backwards, but we also had to build projections looking forward. And we now have a tool that we've released called Finn that is actually generally available, but that's the tool we built to deal with this, which is how can I take the contracts I have now, turn them into recurring revenue, project it out, look at my staffing costs, and make sure that I'm having at least a 40% profit margin on all these businesses. And we learned that a lot from a CEO's group we joined locally that had a lot of older businesses, manufacturing businesses, a lot of guys that were running businesses. One person's business is 140 years old. Just like such basics that you think, but when you are in the software world, like all of my friends were building venture cap businesses. They knew their burn rate. They didn't know their profitability. They were their cash flow positivity was 3 years in the future. It was just a totally different mindset. And by shifting to the kind of classical business sense and actually using these projections, we were able to save the business. And now we look forward and we go, hey, if this happens, we need to make the layoff now, 3 months ahead, to be able to preserve the profit margin so that we can serve the customers that we have better. That all became part of it. And then paying down debt. And there were some gnarly loans that you take and lines of credit to kind of make up for those mistakes, because you can have $100,000 in the bank and that cash just drops out real fast when you're taking losses. You have to kind of always have this, we have this like cash flow kind of floor, I want to say, that we just don't go below anymore. And we make sure that we never find ourselves in that situation again.
Yeah. So I want to really talk about it, because that's such a great point you made, Mike, that there is a difference between the difference in attitude, there's a difference in operating procedures between those who are bootstrapped, running their own cash flow, as it were, as opposed to VC led companies. Both are busy, both are growing, as it were, but they actually have to be looked at and run differently. What insights can you share from the way you're had to now relook at this classical way of running a business to your friends, like you say, who have runways? What kind of differences should people be looking out for? Because there'll be people here that'll be listening going, I've been bootstrapped for a little bit, now I'm ready to go VC route, or I'm going to kick off with a VC route right from the very start, and they're not going to learn the classical lessons. What kind of insights could you share with us that they should understand and realize?
Yeah, I want to say that, you know, there are many times my co-founder and I explored the idea of tapping out, so to speak. Like, hey, we would love to get some VC money and just like go back to the salary, feel comfortable again. And I've talked to my friends who went that route, and they're saying it's really not comfortable either. It's not any better. Yes, you have your kind of standard salary coming out, but they still have these numbers that they have to hit. And their big thing is, at the end of it, I may end up with nothing. So I'm just working a job here. And if I don't hit the numbers, if I don't kind of get an exit out of this, if this doesn't really take off, I end up with zero. Bootstrap, if you at least are cash flow positive, if you are at least profitable, you are harvesting really nice profits throughout the journey. So even if you maybe your business doesn't work out for the long term, you don't survive 140 years, you still have gotten some kind of valuation out of it all that time while you were performing your service. But to last 140 years, you have to cover these downsides. You have to do things like build a war chest. So you have to watch it and say, hey, how can I accumulate this cash flow? And sometimes that means slowing the growth down. So if your like lead generation engine is costing you money, sometimes you have to slow that down to preserve profits in the existing business. And so if you look at businesses that have gone 140 years, it wasn't just up and up. It wasn't this hockey stick straight up. It was a little more S&P 500 like. And so you have to start thinking of it like that. Like, oh, you know what? I would be happy with 10% growth, 20% growth year over year, because I'm in this for the long haul. And if I continue to let that compound over time, again, I'm harvesting those profits. Taxation is going to force you to take those profits every year. You don't get to just keep them in the business. So it's sort of irrelevant. Yes. So you will get to kind of see that. So when I talk to my friends who are VC funded and some of them have exited, they said, like, you know, like your model, in a way, they look at my model as almost more secure, because they're like, you're at least harvesting the gains you're making year over year. But that does sometimes mean, hey, if I see a down year kind of coming, I just have to pull back my expenses. I may not get to grow. I'm not going to keep hitting hockey stick. So it's a little more of that slow and steady growth that you got to look out for.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's weird we talk about that right now, because I've just been having a conversation with a CFO, and we talk about the run fast, cut fast mentality of a VC. You know, when it all looks like it's going upwards, you know, we're chucking loads of money at it. But then as soon as we start seeing a downward, we're cutting a load of money out of it. Your operating expenses just fall. And now you're just trying to find cash to operate from, whereas you don't have the precise control that a bootstrapper like you can say, do you know what? I'm going to turn it down a little bit. I'm not going to cut it to the bone. I'm turning it down a little bit so I can still operate, but still grow, albeit at a slower rate. So yeah, there's pros and cons of operating in both fields, you know, which is great. So anyone who's listening here, who's now thinking, do you know what? I'm not quite sure which way to go down, whether I keep it on bootstrap or whether I go VC. You know, Mike shared quite a lot there, you know, by saying, look at what your VC is going to give you. Make sure you got the right VC from that. And what is it that you really want out of a company? Is it the big salary, the so forth, and hopefully the big exit? Or do you want to reap the rewards as you go, good, bad, or indifferent, so that there is a much bigger goal at the end? So, you know, it's a big question to ask, but I think it's a question that we need to ask as founders, you know, definitely.
For sure. And I think there's certain things that lend themselves to VC funding, like the AI efforts of OpenAI, for instance. You can't bootstrap that, because for 10 years, unless it's in its final form, nobody's buying it. So there's no cash flow to deal with. Service businesses like mine, they work really well in the bootstrap arena. And you won't find many VCs that want to invest in a service business, because it just doesn't have that $1 billion exit they're looking for. But I would argue, if you are kind of want to be an entrepreneur, service business is a great way to start too. You're just going to learn these things. And I feel like that would only make you stronger if you go the VC route when you have your rocket ship to build someday, when you're like, hey, because I think that VCs are really going to like that. Or the ones I've talked to tend to like the idea that, oh, you're responsible with money because you've put your own on the line before.
That's a good point. That's a really good one. You've shown your worth. You've shown you're fiscally responsible. And you show that you have that entrepreneurial part of you that not only is about creation, but about sustainability and growth as well, which is what VCs would love to have. So let's shift gears a little bit, Mike. We've talked about the downturn. We've talked about the lessons that you know that have come your way and that you've grown from that. And then it turned again. It turned in your favor, but it didn't turn just because it was 2024. It didn't turn just because, you know, the bad times finished. You made positive steps in order to make that turn, you know, whether that be a pilot plug ship or a big Titanic. You had to make those turns in order to point in the direction that you're pointing right now, which is fantastic because it's up. Let's talk about some of those things. I know one of those things, like you said, this mastermind, this old school classic entrepreneurial mastermind. Let's talk a little bit about that and the lessons you've learned and how different that is to the entrepreneur you were before.
Yeah. I think one of the first lessons that kind of struck us really hard is when you're in this downturn and tech is in this downturn, you start to kind of make excuses for yourself, like, oh, the economy is bad. And then you look at the economy and things like the elections and you're like, oh, this is all going to change things. And somebody once told us in that mastermind, at your level, like below $5 million, none of that matters. Yeah. Those economic shifts do not affect you. And it was great because it just caused us to say, like, get that out of your head. Like, that's what they would call head trash in our group, is like, that's head trash. You're making excuses. Enough is enough. The biggest thing we had to figure out was key differentiators. And that kind of comes into this idea of going where you stand out. That was another piece of information that we had gotten. And initially, we were always on this idea that we wanted to be a startup studio, get these greenfield projects, these MVPs that we were really good. You churn them out, we guarantee you an MVP in 90 days. And we were really good at doing that. But then all the other agencies were really good at doing that too. Everybody wants the greenfield projects. And so then it kind of dawned on us to go for these dirty projects, which is this idea that we were in this mastermind with people who had older businesses that had built software that were on these legacy frameworks that were just dying. Old instances of Magento, ASP.NET that was no longer supported, AngularJS that was deprecated. And we thought, why don't we help these folks? Nobody wants these projects. I'll take these projects. Not only that, these companies have money. You know, you're not taking with the, when you're dealing with a bootstrap startup founder or someone who's kind of trying to build their MVP, there's a lot on the line. They're using their own money. They're usually upset when they find out after 12 weeks, like, oh, I didn't get it right. Like, they're trying to get it right on the first shot. And that's an extremely rare thing to like build a product that catches fire. It doesn't work like that. You're iterating on it year after year after year. Let's go for these folks. They have businesses. These are mission critical business systems that they can attribute a revenue number to. And we want to upgrade and modernize these systems and help them. And they have trouble hiring software engineers too. A lot of times they have employees that are quitting. They're going to startups. They maybe did some stuff overseas and they're having trouble kind of finding the right fit for their organization. And we went after these dirty projects. And that's really where we saw the increases. And then also not going after these big six-figure numbers. Like, let's just sell a week. Like, we'll sell a week at a time, a month at a time on the project, smaller numbers. And all that starts to stack up into MRR. And by the end of you could get to $1 million that way. It just feels slow when you're doing it, but it actually happens. And again, the magic of compounding, because these projects turn into bigger projects. And we really stood out because we had this startup experience. We're typically younger than a lot of the software companies. They were used to dealing with what I would call IT companies, which like did their computers and their networking, and then they somehow fell into doing their website. Then they fell into trying to build the software. And it's just a totally different mindset of like converting them to agile mindset and getting into this idea of how to build an engineering team and how to keep software up to date. It's very different than kind of classical IT. So we came in as this like breath of fresh air, like these guys come from startups, they know how to do this stuff. And going where we stand out is really what turned things around for us.
I love that phrase, going where you stand out, because it is. This is one of the key components, certainly from our clients' perspective, is making them stand out. Because everybody's an expert out there, but no one seems to be the authority. Or they just claim, I'm the expert at this, I'm the expert at that, we're experts at this. But you're the same expert that I've heard 30 times this month. You know, you're exactly the same expert. I can't hear anything different from you. So it takes something different. And as you correctly, stand where you will stand out. What will make you stand out from the rest, from effectively the noise? There's a massive noise out there, and it's just whether you want to see the noise as Charlie Brown's rah, 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 this rumble or this just massive crowd at a concert. It's still noise, and your ideal client can't find you. Just right. Can't find you.
You know? It's fully true. Go on LinkedIn right now. I mean, it's just noise, and you're writing a post. You post it, and you see six other posts that are just like the thing that you just posted. You're like, oh my God, like, you're not saying anything. Everyone's saying the same stuff. Everybody's posting the same stuff about AI. And then you look in your in-mail and it's the same automation. And we've gone down that path too of trying lead gen through these like in-mail and cold campaigns. And I go, you know, I don't open any of those. Why do I think that this is going to work for me? Like I actually haven't bought anything from one of these. Why do I think that this is? So that's where we started going to these in-person events. You know, we were going to events where we were the youngest people there by probably 20 years. And, you know, black tie, had to wear a tuxedo, playing golf. Like I took up golf this year with older folks. And suddenly things started to happen for our business because they were like, oh, I know a software person. That crowd also really valued the idea of I could pick up the phone and call these guys. I don't have to email him. I don't have, you know, Michael pick up my call and he'll give me just free advice just because that kind of generation, I think, really likes the I have a guy for that kind of feeling.
Yeah.
You don't get that feeling from LinkedIn and in-mail and stuff. So really just changing the whole strategy, it really was a huge help. And it really helped target the generation that has the money to pay for our service, which was the other side.
Yeah, there's an old phrase, there's an old British phrase that there's brass in that old muck, right? So there's an old phrase. So sometimes, you know, you don't have to keep following the shiny object. You don't have to go where everyone else is following. Sometimes just the old stuff, it might be a little bit dirty. It might be a little bit mucky, but you know, there's some brass in there. That if you dig deep enough and you rub and you help and you serve, there's some really good stuff there, you know, and I think you're a good classic walking everyday example of you don't have to follow the crowd. You don't have to do what everyone else is doing to be successful. Talking about success, you know, and I can't believe where the time has gone, Mike. It's just flying by.
Man.
I knew it's going to be a great one, this one. So let's talk about scalability because, yes, you are dealing with, you have changed your business model. You're now talking, you know, you're dealing with people like in a generation, like you say, who, yes, I do want to have Mike on the end of my, on speed dial. You know, I've got a guy for that. My lawyer, my accountant, my doctor, my software guy. This is their generation. This is how they built their businesses. And I think it's key point why I'll just say businesses here. These are people who have had businesses for decades, not years, you know, so they have a certain way of doing things. And if you can form into their way of doing things, then you can grow with them effectively. But here lies the rubber, scalability. Being on the end of the phone for someone, being my guy, there's going to be challenges when it comes to scalability. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah. So we talk about this. This is one thing where I think the traditional startup advice helps a lot is you're going to do things that don't scale. I almost say like, take that thought out of your head because when we were fighting for our lives, it definitely wasn't scalable for Mike to write all the code that was coming out of Cause of a Kind. But for 2023, myself and one other person pretty much wrote all the code and I did all the sales calls with my co-founder again. And he did all the customer success, right? We had a project manager. So like you had to like go back to, hey, there's no scale to this, but we're in survival mode. And then you start to see, you're like, you know, you're right. Having that can't always be the guy to pick up the phone. The thing that I've realized over the years, one is the fear of your phone ringing off the hook. That's not going to be the problem. As a business owner, I want that to be the problem so badly. Even when we're doing well, my phone is still not ringing enough. You know, I'm thinking like, I want to be on the phone Saturday. Then I'm going to train someone to do what I do. And one of the things that we've done a little bit differently than other orgs is we've started to move really to onshore resourcing. And that I will say was easier to do because we have a lot of unemployed engineers in the United States right now. There's definitely a, whereas when we started, engineers were getting hired for crazy salaries that we could never even dream of affording. Now everything's come back down to like a more sustainable level. And I think that the scalable model is we try and hire engineers that can actually talk with people. And so now we have 5 people working with us at this scale, which is crazy because you think we have the same scale that we did in 2022 on 5 engineers instead of 22 engineers. But these are folks that are well immersed kind of in the cultural challenges of what it's like to be a US-based business, and they can get on the phone. In some cases, we can even show up to the office if need be, if that's like what you want. And that I think is going to be a bigger thing in the future, especially where everybody's trying to AI automate that away. And I know a lot of older heads that are very frustrated by that, even though the AI is so, so good these days. It still has not, we haven't reached the singularity. You're not fooled still. They still sometimes want to get on a face-to-face or, hey, can I just call you? Like, I got this weird thing's going on with the software. Help me out. I like to hire engineers that can handle that. And I'm finding that from this pool of people that have recently been laid off, we found a lot of really good folks that are actually able to work very well. The title that I used to carry when I did this job is forward deployed engineer. Sometimes it's called integration engineer. There's a lot of software engineers that are actually really good with working with people. And I think that's going to be the big scalable differentiator for us over time, is that you won't just call Mike, but whoever you get on the phone will be at my level and will be of that caliber that can speak to you and dumb all the tech concepts down. Because a lot of times they're engineers get too in the weeds. They want people like, find me a solution that I can understand and get it done. Like, stop the bleeding in my business, figure it out. You know, when there's tech that's down, there's usually some amount of blood loss that's occurring. And so it's like, how do we mitigate that first? Then solve it the right way. So then circle back, solve it the right way. A lot of folks that kind of are very business-minded as engineers, and you're seeing a ton of them now with the aid of AI, like punching above their weight class too, because now they can design and things don't, you know, people are able to kind of broaden their scope now with these tools. I think that's going to be where the scalability comes from. But generally, I try not to worry too much about the scale. I always want more scale. So it's always below where I want it to be.
Yeah, but I'll tell you, this is even very subtly what you just said there was, look, there are some lessons that need to be learned. And it's like, if it's not happening to me right now, it doesn't mean it's not on my radar. It just means I don't have to worry about it right now. There's a lot of people out there who are worried about the what ifs too earlier on. And that inhibits them from just from growing today, because it's just too much of a what will happen if this happens later on, which it just hasn't happened yet. You know, like you said, if you're not at 3 million, if you're not at 5 million, you're not at 10 million, some of that stuff you don't even have to worry about yet.
Not at all.
You got to get to where you need to get to, then work it out from there.
And you're harvesting your profits too. And a lot of times the answer is like, you may have to hire a person ahead of when they're truly needed. So it's like, hey, I'm going to bring in somebody. But if you're harvesting your profits properly, you can actually like invest in that going forward, and it becomes less of a burden. So that's kind of the key is do the things that don't scale, harvest those profits. When it truly is at your breaking point, then you can sit there and say, okay, now I'm going to solve the problem and work the problem. And you solve things quicker than you think when you really need to.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it does. You just find a way. It's hard to, it's almost like learning how to swim if you're not in the pool, right? But if you're thrown in the pool, you'll learn to swim.
Yeah.
But trying to learn from the book and go, if I get thrown in the pool, I got to read this manual. It'll take you forever.
Exactly. I mean, it's the rock climbing analogy too. It's, you know, as you're climbing, there's that lactic acid building up, right? There's a burn happening. You know, you cannot climb forever, but there's, when you get to the top, you'll get a rest. There will be a rest somewhere in there where you can regroup and figure it out. So you just got to have faith that you're going to be able to do that.
That's brilliant. Well, listen, Mike, I've got one more loaded question for you. You know, so much has happened to you. You've been the ups, the downs, the ups again. You've got your eye on the future, yet you've still got your eye on where you are today, which is absolutely fantastic. Yeah, you're learning from the old school, but putting it into the modern day. There's so much going on there. There's so much that you've learned. So if you were to go back and well, not even go back, if you were today met your younger self, what would be that one piece of advice that would put young Mike on the right path?
Yeah, so let's see. When we say younger self, were we going back like graduating college or just 2 years ago?
It doesn't matter because, you know, everybody's journey starts somewhere, right?
Yeah. So I would say that if it was the moment that we had gone full time, I would have told myself, do not hire prematurely. Do everything yourself as long as like hold on to, be conservative longer. That would have been my initial thing is be conservative with your money longer, kind of run that tighter ship, because I think that would have helped us. And that's do that thing that doesn't scale another month, another 2 months, just a little bit longer than you want to. Now, if I go back to Mike, who was like, wanted to be the forest ranger, who did, you know, I would have simply said that it all is going to work out. That's it. It's all you need to know is it's all going to work out. Cause there were times in that time, cause it was 2008, I couldn't get a job doing anything in forestry. I was working at Enterprise Rent-A-Car and just miserable, like selling this rental car insurance. And in fact, I always say that was probably one of the most formative experiences of my life is being forced to do sales when I'm not a natural salesman and selling a product that everybody says no to the minute you don't even get the words out and they say no. And so having to do that for 2 years, what a valuable experience. So I always say it's that kind of comforting, it's all going to be okay. And also the toughest experiences are actually your best experiences. That pain is learning and you just don't see it yet. That's it. Like, and you will use this someday.
That's brilliant. That's absolutely brilliant. Well, thank you, Mike, for your time today. Thank you for sharing so much with us. You know, there's some great insight. Once we break all this down, there's so many little nuggets in there. If people want to get hold of you, they potentially want to work for you or what the potential of working, what's the best way of getting hold of you, Mike?
Yeah, on LinkedIn, I'm on there as Michael Rispoli. On X, I'm also Michael_Rispoli. And of course, causeofakind.com, my, you know, contact is there. That's our website. So those channels are perfect for getting a hold of me.
Brilliant. Well, I'll make sure that all those details are inside the show notes so people can just do a one click and get in touch with you, because I'm sure there'll be people there thinking, do you know what? There's something in Mike says that's just aren't worth exploring a little bit further. So thank you very much Mike. It's been an absolute honor, pleasure having you here today.
Thanks so much, Gary. It was absolute pleasure being on the podcast as well.
Well, thank you. And thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for being with us for yet another episode of the Growth Focus podcast. If you have taken anything from our episode today or any of the nuggets that Mike has managed to share, please make sure you comment, make sure you like. But more importantly, after subscribing, please make sure you share. There are other people out there just like you, just like I, just like Mike out there who are growing businesses. Advice and insights from others can just help us take that very next step. So do everybody a favor, including yourself, and make sure we share this message. So until next time, thank you very much for joining us. Thank you, Mike. We shall see you all on the next episode. Goodbye, everybody.